The Gadget Guide on Cambridge 105 Radio with the Centre for Computing History, Cambridge. Making the history of computing fun for everyone. Visit computinghistory.org.uk to find out more.
Thanks very much to Steffi for the last couple of hours on Home. Welcome to The Gadget Guide.
Yeah, welcome to Gadget Guide show number 255 with the latest tech news, and then we'll catch up with the state of folding smartphones.
The ones intended to fold up rather than the ones that you sit on accidentally. but first of all, it's time to take a look at this week's technology news. And Zoom, yep, that company that everyone was familiar with for getting us through remote working during the pandemic and so on. Really the poster child of that wants its workers to return to the office.
Yeah, the irony, of course, is that a lot of people have got used to working remotely, the hybrid model, the work from home most of the time model, and Zoom and other applications like Teams being the things that have enabled people to carry on being part of their work community. Zoom have decided that it would like its employees to actually be face-to-face a bit more than they have been, and have now decreed that anyone within 50 miles of a Zoom office has to at least do some hybrid work, so coming into the office occasionally. The challenge is not sure if they've actually done the calculations correctly or how flexible this is, because, you know, you don't want to be that 49-mile person.
Yes.
Gloated at by the 51-mile person.
And this seems to be the slightly bizarre thing, is they are only applying this to people within 50 miles of a Zoom office.
Yes.
Anyone further than that is able to stay remote. So that feels a bit weird to say, actually, we think you can be a totally valuable employee entirely remote because you live 51 miles away. I wonder if people are going to move further from the office to be able to stay remote. That seems completely counterintuitive.
Either that, or maybe someone's done the carbon emissions calculations on non-EV cars and worked out that 50 miles is sort of a sweet spot on remote computing power versus travelling to the office. Those are difficult calculations to quantify.
Yeah, and I think we are across the industry sort of seeing this weird thing where companies have been very quick to jump on the, hey, you could, you know, we'll hire people remotely, and it does, yeah, it brings advantages. You can obviously attract a much wider pool of people because
with
suddenly
less
it's not just
space.
The ones, less office space, people from further afield. It's not just the Cambridge tech community, it's the whole of the UK or even further afield.
Even that other Cambridge could contribute staff.
Yeah, but at the same time, they're now sort of saying, well, okay, we've employed all these people on the basis of remote work, and now we want to roll back on that a bit. And I think that's perhaps a bit of a challenge. It sort of feels a little bit like maybe, you know, start hiring, you know, people you hire going forward, you want to be able to come into the office, but people who you've employed on the basis of remote, maybe you should let them carry on being remote.
Yes, I think it's going to be an interesting time for quite a while to come on how people work in the changed world. And yeah, I think we are seeing benefits as far as less travel is concerned, meaning less emissions, less time spent doing the boring thing of sitting in a vehicle, travelling to somewhere, and then doing the same at the end of the day. Anyway, the other thing that Zoom are in the news for this week is a little bit of AI, and of course everyone is trying to throw machine learning or AI into their products these days. Zoom are possibly looking at adding some of it into their platform as well. The big problem is that they have not said exactly how they're going to use your data and whether you can opt out or not.
Yes, and this was a change that went into their terms and conditions, all about what data they could be used, that they could use for improving their products. Obviously, everyone wants better products. No one's going to argue against that. And what they could use for training their AI models. And in the T's and C's, there are two sorts of data. There's data about how you're using Zoom, So, for example, how many meetings you're in and how long you spend in those meetings and what devices and how good your quality is and all of that stuff. And I think that would have been pretty uncontroversial if they said, okay, all of that data we can use to improve the service. I don't think they would have got much pushback from that.
And even things like, we know that the UK work hours have shifted a little bit, so what times do we put more resources in to make sure our service is more stable because of load?
All that stuff, you know, how you're using Zoom, I think would have been totally fine. What they also put in as a change, and whether this was intentional or not, seems to be something that suggests that your content, so that's things like files that you share through Zoom or transcriptions of your meeting content, so the actual words that you say in the meeting, that can also be used to train these models. And I think that's
maybe even the recording of your meeting.
Yep, that seems to, at least to a cursory reading of the terms, that seems to be included. And I think it's that content that people are saying, hang on, no, that's not yours to play with. Yeah, that's my data as a customer. You are entitled to do stuff with how I'm using the service, but you're not entitled to look into the content of my meetings.
It would be the same as your mobile provider saying, yeah, we're going to record your phone
calls.
We can identify your voice better and train the model of our AI-based customer care system so that when you call up, it says, hello, Robert.
And of course, you know, this is not a new problem, and it's not an AI-specific one. Amazon have certainly caught flack in the past for listening to customer recordings from their Echo digital voice assistants and using those to improve the service. You know, is something you say to your digital assistant, is that yours, or is that something that can be used to improve the service? Again, we all want the service to be better. In this case, I think the major concern was that it was listened to by humans, whereas Zoom is more saying, actually, we'll feed this into machines. But I could imagine companies in particular being a little bit annoyed if their commercially sensitive material was fed into Zoom's product improvements. So watch this space. I suspect there will probably be some clarification and or changes to that in the coming weeks.
And probably find all the other platforms will start checking their T's and C's to make sure that they don't end up doing a Zoom by mistake. Google, on the other hand...
Talking of doing a Zoom.
Yes, have been obviously also trying to convince Googlers to return to the office, but are now coming up with another idea. Besides all the free food and free gyms and play spaces and so on in the Mountain View campus, they're now looking at offering... basically on-site accommodation for $99 a night.
Now, so that
if you are there late, you can crawl into a bed and crawl out of a bed without going home.
Now, this is possibly my slightly skewed sort of financial metrics. I saw this and went, oh, that's quite expensive.
And then worked out what your house and car cost.
Well, yes, but that it doesn't cost me £60, so $99 about £60 a day. Like, it doesn't cost me anywhere near that to commute to work. I'm fairly fortunate that I live pretty close to my work, but nonetheless, that would be, if I did that on a regular basis, that would be pretty extravagant. And
although,
I suspect that, if we look at
sort of cost, if you were travelling into London and taking a peak ticket to London, it's about
true.
That sort of cost.
But you've still got to get back from the office at some point.
Yes.
It makes the times more convenient, perhaps.
Yeah.
But then if I looked at some of the budget hotels that are around Cambridge, I suspect
a lot
I could
less
probably
than
find
60
a room
quid,
for less than £60. But maybe this is just an America thing or a Seattle thing. You know, Seattle is a very
Mountain
View,
California
area. Oh, sorry, I'm down the wrong.
You're thinking
wrong
Microsoft.
The West Coast.
This is Google.
But in fact, even more so than, you know, it's an expensive area. Maybe local hotels are more than that. In any case, I don't know. How would you feel about being asked to effectively spend another £60 a day that you were in the office on top of
and
having to travel into
cynical,
the office?
The cynical person says, and paying your employer for a bed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know. Yes, quite.
I think that's interesting. This does seem to be part of a larger push where they are apparently factoring office attendance into people's performance reviews. I suspect that could prompt some interesting conversations. See our earlier discussion about hybrid work.
Googlers may be becoming available for hiring. moving on from Google and staying with AI, this is an interesting little bit of research that has been done, and it's another reason to consider a password manager. But researchers at Cornell University in the States have managed to train a machine learning model that can listen to your keystrokes on your keyboard. It doesn't matter what keyboard it is, but basically look at how you type and predict your password with 95% accuracy.
Yeah, and obviously this is going to be something that is even more accurate if your password is based on a word.
Yes.
You know, if your password is truly random, then its 95% accuracy isn't going to actually be good enough, because most services will lock you out after, you know, 5 attempts or something like that of getting it wrong. Chances are that'll still be secure, but if it's football or Manchester United or Cambridge United,
those are going to be fairly predictable. Yes.
Those are going to be a lot more accurately detected. It's interesting that they also tested it during a Zoom call.
Oh dear.
It's not entirely clear whether they took the audio off of the Zoom call or whether it was sort of before the Zoom, because Zoom, of course, does a lot of echo cancelling. It tries to suppress any background noise, any music, anything like that. But they still reckon they can get 93% accuracy. Skype? Skype's still a thing? I thought that was long gone. 91.7%.
It's when you call your parents on not Zoom.
Okay.
or not WhatsApp.
Of course, the easy solution to this, apart from maybe type quieter or a bit more randomly, is to use a password manager, because yes, then you shouldn't be actually typing a password in any of the time apart from when you unlock your computer and log into your password manager.
And for that, consider biometrics, physical key-based, so USB dongle authenticators, or face authentication, which is
or even
options available on most Windows and Mac platforms.
Or even a PIN code.
Yes.
So on Windows, if you log in with a PIN, that means that you're separating something that will only work on when you're in front of your laptop from the password that you might log into your Microsoft account on a website or your company account on a website. So it means even if someone can spot your PIN somehow, they can't do anything unless they can get their hands physically on your laptop. So PIN login can be a good option there. But yes, use a password manager if you don't already. Lots out there. 1Password, LastPass, KeyPass, Keeper. Yeah, many, many different options. Go onto the Cambridge 105 Radio website and look for previous gadget guides on password managers if you've not already got one.
Staying in the AI space, Microsoft... Well, there are a couple of things about Microsoft's AI-powered Bing chat in the news this week. The first one is that they are going to be bringing it to mobile browsers on Android and iOS beyond their own app. So basically making it available in Chrome and Safari on mobile.
I guess I'm interested to see if that gets traction. but I realise that I fall firmly into the cynical category with any of these sort of AI chatbots.
So the most useful thing I've managed to use it for was giving it a video clip. It was a news video clip, and I didn't have time to sit and watch the video. I just wanted the text, and I said, give me a text summary of this video, gave it the URL, and got back and basically said, do it in 200 words, and got 200 words that was reasonably concise of the video.
Now, I'm just going to use that as further argument that people should write instructions instead of just posting videos of everything, but that's probably another grumpy old man decision for another day.
absolutely agree on that. Absolutely agree on that. The other thing about Bing Chat is it's celebrating its 6th month birthday.
Gosh, it's...
Yeah. Yes. 6 months since Microsoft started throwing chat into the Bing search engine and making it available on in its own app on mobile and PC platforms.
And of course, Bing's chat is powered by OpenAI, which is the same company. It's a sort of semi-open foundation behind ChatGPT.
So Microsoft is being just a stakeholder in that organization as well.
Exactly. So it's a very similar technology to ChatGPT, just fed with some different data sources, effectively.
Yes, yes. Moving away from AI and into the smart home space, some interesting rumours in the world of Philips Hue, of course, best known for their smart coloured light bulbs, LED lights, and the basically one of the pioneers of that space. Yes, there were some Kickstarter companies that got to market a little bit before them, but the backing of Philips, now owned by Signify, meant that the Hue became a very popular smart light bulb. There's now a rumour that Hue are going to be releasing some smart security cameras, now, as this well as some home security add-ons and features as well.
This wouldn't be unheard of, because a lot of the other sort of home IoT, home assistant companies are doing this. We've got things like the Ring, doorbells and security cameras and stuff, you know, home automation stuff. Same with Nest and Hive. Yeah, all of these companies have diversified across that kind of everything to do with your house control portfolio. So not tremendously surprising to see Hue do the same thing. And there's some neat overlap there. You know, maybe if a camera detects movement, then turn the lights on. You know, if the door is opened, turn the lights on, not just for security, but also for convenience. So I totally see why they're doing this. I guess it's just, do we need another manufacturer of security cameras? I'm not sure.
We've got to have something to have a security vulnerability to talk about in 6 months' time. let's hope that they get all of those elements right. Expected to be revealing some stuff at IFA in Berlin next month. We'll be reporting from there when that's on.
Yep. PayPal, meanwhile, in electronic money, is launching its latest adventure into cryptocurrency. So this is something called a stablecoin. It's a cryptocurrency asset. So it's sort of digital money backed by maths is probably the best example here. But unlike things like Bitcoin, which can be hugely volatile in terms of value, we've seen it gain and lose horrendous amounts of money. Good if you get in and out at the right time, bad if you don't. But the stablecoin is tethered to, in this case, the US dollar. So the idea is that it will always, if you get one PayPal USD, PYUSD as they're calling it, then that will always be worth one US dollar, regardless of the currency's trading up or down. What advantages this gives is not necessarily obvious compared to a PayPal balance.
I can't see an advantage to this either, so I don't know. I mean, apart from finally getting around to doing something that Elon Musk wanted to do when he was involved in the company.
Yeah, and PayPal have
launched their own crypto.
PayPal have explored cryptocurrency in the past. You can, in the same way as you hold pounds or dollars in your wallet, you can also hold Bitcoin. With that, you can't transfer within PayPal between those currencies, between cryptocurrency and a normal currency. It's always been sort of two separate balances, and you can just use it as a way of storing those.
Maybe this is the stepping stone for that.
I'm sure it is. But given that PayPal already allows people to hold balances in true currencies, I don't quite get what they're offering beyond the marketing tick by saying this is backed by a cryptocurrency. You know, they already have a database of Rob has £12 in this account. I don't know how this will be different in practice, but let's see what they do.
Yes, we'll keep an eye on that one. Moving over to the gaming space, and Microsoft could be getting ready to launch an all-digital Xbox. So basically following Sony's PlayStation model of dumping the DVD drive out of the gaming console. It looks like a box. I guess we'll be seeing something at IFA as well on this front, but remains to be seen. So yes, possibly a new Xbox Series X. They're going to fall foul of Elon with all of the X's at some point, I'm sure.
Well, who got that first?
He'll claim he did, always.
No doubt. Yes, from a hardware design point of view, it is a box. It's a cube, plus the controller, of course. But it's obviously freeing them from the optical device means that they potentially get a lot more flexibility in the form factor and potentially can make it quite a bit smaller. So in this case, the mock-up that we're seeing here looks like it's about the same dimension as the controller is wide, so you might guess that's probably about 150-200 millimeters on each side. Slightly interesting because, of course, if people want to put it underneath the television, maybe that'll be less convenient. On the other hand, if you sit it on the floor, it'll probably look quite nice. So watch this space.
Possibly just tucked behind your TV. Mm. So
well,
yes.
If there's no optical drive, you don't need to get at it, do you?
Exactly. So we'll keep an eye on Microsoft for that one.
Yep. In messaging news, WhatsApp seemed to be testing voice chats for up to 32 participants. So this is something that has started emerging for Android users in the first case. We'll see how long it takes to work out to roll out to everyone. Obviously, again, following on from the likes of Telegram, Discord, Slack, and other platforms that have done these larger chats, and Zoom, of course. I suspect that WhatsApp are pretty keen to kind of keep everyone in the platform as much as possible. Not clear whether this is going to extend to video calls at any time soon.
I'm just, 32 people in a room having a conversation.
Yes, you'd hope that there's liberal use of the mute when you're not talking function.
You'd like to think so. But anyway, WhatsApp, of course, another one to watch. If you haven't signed up for the beta plan, check the app store that you get your WhatsApp application from. You might be able to sign up for beta versions, which gets you the new features before everyone else.
Yep. And then finally in the news, Apple is rumored to be launching the iPhone 15. That looks like it's going to be sort of mid to late September. They are struggling a little bit for parts, according to some reports. Of course, the supply chain issues that we had over the last few years, they've improved, but they haven't necessarily completely resolved themselves. Whether that affects availability or launch date, we're not quite sure yet. Apple generally pretty good at having devices ready to buy on launch day, pretty much in their stores. It's going to be interesting to see.
Launch day looking to be rumored to be the 13th of September, which is a Wednesday. Various mobile carriers been telling their staff that that's not the best day to have off because of a major phone launch. Of course, some of the headline things that we've been talking about as possibles are USB-C as the interface on the phone, more storage, and there's even rumors of there being a 2 terabyte storage iPhone 15 Pro and Pro Max, which will make the people who are absolute creators of video and
content,
photo
in particular,
on their phones very happy. A lot less time uploading. And of course, a good USB-C port means getting that 4K video off your iPhone is going to be fairly easy.
Maybe
so it's double the current maximum. Sorry?
Maybe they're just short of USB-C ports.
Or 2 terabyte
flash
storage, yes. So we'll be keeping an eye out for that one next month already. It is September. And seeing what Apple announced the event. I don't think they've sent the invitations out for the event yet. That's normally a couple of weeks beforehand that they send those out.
Well, from Apple to other manufacturers of phones, we're going to be taking a look at the state of folding phones. Which ones fold? Which ones unfold? Next.
Cambridge 105 Radio. Wednesdays on Cambridge 105 Radio, Queer Cambridge. Hannah, Daisy and Debbie have topical discussion from the LGBTQ community. A look at queer news nationally and locally, and events you can get involved in. Queer Cambridge with Town & Gown Pub and Theatre, Cambridge's most exciting venue. Wednesday at 6 on Cambridge 105 Radio. Leonardo Hotel Milton Keynes is giving one lucky winner the chance to win a two-night getaway with a friend, including breakfast both mornings. Located on Midsummer Boulevard, Leonardo Hotel Milton Keynes is the perfect choice for a weekend break, with 279 stylish and spacious rooms featuring the Dream Bed by Leonardo Hotels. We have an on-site stylish bar and restaurant. We're just a 5-minute walk from the train station and centrally located amongst all the main bars and restaurants. If you fancy a shopping trip, the Centre MK and Midsummer Place are also within a 5-minute walk. For the best rates, visit leonardohotels.co.uk and listen out for our competition question throughout the day here on Cambridge 105 Radio. Terms and conditions apply. The annual Bridge the Gap Walk returns to Cambridge on Sunday, September the 10th.
This family-friendly, leisurely stroll through the grounds of some of Cambridge's finest colleges is in aid of two Cambridge charities.
Arthur Rank Hospice Charity and Romsey Mill.
We have a brand new route this year, visiting places that haven't featured in Bridge the Gap before.
The Society of Cambridge Tourist Guides will be on hand to talk about the history of the colleges and their grounds.
The walk starts and ends on Parker's Peace, where there'll be food, drink and entertainment for everyone.
Registration is easy. Just visit arhc.org.uk/BTG.
Or look out for the QR code on Bridge the Gap posters and flyers displayed across Cambridge.
The 2023 Bridge the Gap Walk, supported by Cambridge 105 Radio.
The all-new USA Chicken is now open on Milton Road. With delicious fried chicken, tasty pizzas and mouth-watering doner kebabs. All freshly cooked on the premises. We're open midday to 10pm Monday to Saturday and 3 to 10pm on Sunday. And we'll soon be offering a delivery service across Cambridge. Find us at 22 Milton Road near Mitcham's Corner. And keep an eye out for us on social media.
The Gadget Guide on Cambridge 105 Radio. With the Centre for Computing History, Cambridge. Making the history of computing fun for everyone. Visit computinghistory.org.uk to find out more.
And we're talking the state of folding phones. Yep, after many years of, well, phones looking a bit like a black bar of soap with one lump of glass on the front, and maybe you got a different lump of glass on the back. And that's about all the variation that you saw. We're starting to get a bit of a real exploration into different form factors. And of course, we've seen a few abortive attempts at this, haven't we? The folding phones over the last 5 years that got launched and then quietly withdrawn once the first reviewers had sat on them and they'd broken a few times.
Yeah, I think that was ironed out in the first couple of generations. And considering Samsung were up to their fourth generation at the beginning of, well, tail end of last year, beginning of this year, they've just launched their fifth generations. So they're obviously working out how to get things to work. It is a few years since we did first look at flip phones or folding phones. So, yeah, as I say, fold versus flip. I mean, that's the first variant, is that we are seeing things that either open like a book. Yep. Or like a clamshell, like those original Motorola flip phones
Star-Tex
that we
and things like that, wasn't that, it? Yeah,
that were very popular back in the pre-smartphone mobile phone days. Samsung.
Effectively, yeah? the difference here is whether you want it to be originally the size that your phone probably is at the moment and fold out into something that's twice that size, or whether you want something that, when it's unfolded, is the size that you're used to at the moment and it folds in half to go into a smaller pocket, perhaps. Obviously, thicker. Yeah, when it's folded up, it's going to be twice as thick as when it's unfolded. That goes for both options.
Twice as thick, but, you know, if it's folded in half like a clamshell, possibly pocket-sized, although there is that risk of sitting on things again. We've all done it. So Samsung recently launched, and literally in the last few weeks, two new phones in the Galaxy Z range, which are their folding range, the Z Fold and the Z Flip 5.
Yep, the Z Fold 5, 7.6-inch main screen. So this is effectively larger than the smallest tablets when it's in the unfolded state. 6.2-inch cover screen. So this is interesting that you effectively can use it folded or unfolded.
Yes, and of course when you unfold it, it's double that size screen, so it becomes almost tablet sized.
Yep, Yeah, so it's quite a powerful thing. And of course, to really take advantage of these larger screens when it's in tablet mode, you've also got the option of Samsung's Pen, the S Pen.
I think they're throwing it in these days.
Yep.
I don't think it's an option. I think it comes with it.
As in the input option. So
yes,
rather than just poking it with your finger.
Yes.
You also get the S Pen. That quite nice for more advanced input, because mm-hmm. it's not just sort of where are you poking, it's also how hard you're pushing, what angle you're writing at, which way you even holding the pen in your hand, in the same way as you would with something like a fountain pen or a calligraphy pen. So it's a much more high fidelity input device than just your finger.
And for things like editing videos and photos as well, a pen input can be a lot better.
Yep, very much so. Not skimping on the other features, because, of course, you've got the usual array of cameras, 10 megapixel, 50 megapixel and 12 megapixel on the outward facing, i.e. away from you. Plus, I think there is the front facing cameras as well, although I can't instantly see the specs on those ones. Up to a terabyte of storage. We were talking just now about the rumours of the iPhone 15. And its storage options going up to 2 terabytes. 1T is the max here, but you know, this is still not a small amount of storage if you are doing content creation on the Z Fold 5.
One of the more impressive numbers is the 21 hours of video watching on a battery charge, which is quite impressive.
And of course, this is something that kind of naturally falls out if you make your device twice as thick, because it unfolds. You also get to cram in twice as much battery. There's a limit to how thin you can make each half because of the sort of the structural needs. You don't want it to fold up in the wrong way. You don't want it to snap or to be damaged if you apply a little bit of pressure. So you need it to be a certain thickness. That means that you get to cram a little bit more battery into that space as well. Important, of course, to power that larger screen.
Yeah, now the Z Flip, quite a cool little phone. Folds in half, so your conventional black slab folded in half, but then has a screen on the outside.
Yes, and that is a separate cover screen.
Yes. You know,
the main screen folds inside, so that's kept nice and safe, free of any chance of it getting scratched or anything like that. And the cover screen is a separate 3.4-inch cover screen. So that's the kind of the half-size one. Means you can see maybe notifications, incoming call alerts, that sort of thing, without having to unflip it. The main screen, this is in the unfolded mode, 6.7-inch. So that's pretty comparable to the main screen that you'd see on a lot of normal phones. But of course, the whole thing folded in half is rather smaller, 15 mils thick, folded, coming down to 7 mils thick when you unfold it. So quite a neat little device, nice and compact. I could imagine if you have trousers with smaller pockets, this could actually be quite a nice fit.
I did happen to go to the cinema yesterday, and they are doing a lot of very expensive cinema advertising.
I'm sure, yeah.
Big dig at Apple. because they basically, everyone who sees one of the Z Flip 5s wants one, and everyone's trying to not see it because they're getting sucked into the desire.
Interesting. So that's Samsung's offering, the Z Fold and the Z Flip. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll have a look at some of the others from the likes of Google, Honor, Motorola, and Oppo.
heart done by you. Some things look better, baby, just passing through.
And Dua Lipa, Cold Heart, the Pow remix. You're listening to The Gadget Guide with Rob and Lawrence, and we're talking the other flip phones. So we've just been speaking about the Motorola Samsung. Where am I going?
we will briefly look at Motorola. Yes, there are a few others. Of course, the other biggie being Google with their Pixel Fold.
Yes, this is. I think this is the first generation of folding phones that Google have done, isn't it? Because they've always had the Pixel line, which traditionally were kind of targeted at people developing for Android. Now there is the Pixel Fold, which is more akin to the Z Fold on the Samsung side of things.
Book orientation, yep.
Exactly. So it's a phone that starts off the size of a normal phone and gets bigger, as opposed to something that starts half the size and expands to be a normal phone.
And effectively has three screens because it's got that cover screen as well that you can use. All the manufacturers are showing that you can start with content on the cover, open the phone, and the content moves to the inside.
Let's just address the elephant in the room here, price.
Yep.
Because
don't look at the price. The price is only if you can afford an Apple device you'd buy one of.
And the rest, because... Yeah. The Pixel Fold is coming in at a whopping £1,749 pre-order, and it's okay. You do get a free Pixel watch, which takes a little bit of the sting out of the tail if you need a smartwatch. But £1,700 for a phone.
I think we're seeing the price of £600 per screen being a ballpark, because it's very similar from Samsung as well for their range. So. Yes.
Yeah, but blimey, you know, this is not something that you necessarily just think, oh yeah, I need a new phone, I'll just get a folding one and expect it to be in the same price range. It really isn't. Maybe perhaps a little more tractable if you take it on finance, coming in around about £73 a month if you spread that cost over 24 months. But it does now mean your mobile phone contract, if you add in the calls and the data and stuff like that, it's going to be heading on for £100 a month.
It is worth checking, and all manufacturers are offering these sort of things, trade-in offers. I know Samsung obviously offer more for their own devices, Google offer more for theirs, but they will all offer competitive trade-ins with a few £100 off an older phone. Samsung are offering up to £650 off the Galaxy S23 range, that's effectively this year's phones, but down to £350 for last year's phones. So getting £350 back for a phone that you've enjoyed for a year is actually not too ridiculous. That's about half the price of the phone back, which obviously they are doing things as far as a refurbed market is concerned.
Yes.
But if you want something a bit more budget-oriented, there are other manufacturers. And Oppo is one of the ones that we don't hear often, but are offering. And they're at the 600 point price point for a clamshell foldable, so a flip-style phone. So yep. It's got the outer screen and then a big inner screen. Fairly capable-looking little phone.
I should say it's slightly smaller outer screen than some of their competitors. So
yes,
they've chosen to put the cover screen, as everyone seems to be calling it, on the same side of the phone as the two outward-facing cameras. What that means is that it's effectively a quarter screen. So it takes up about half of one half of the phone when it's folded up. Of course, the slightly neat thing about that is that it makes it the same aspect ratio as your regular phone screen. So whereas the other ones, it's more a sort of square image on the cover, this one is actually like a phone screen, just a quarter of the size. I wonder if that'll play nicer with some apps.
The most interesting use case I've seen for that outer cover screen is basically because you've got a folding phone, it naturally can stand.
Using
it as a selfie screen. So you can basically plonk down on something. You can see the phone screen and you can get your friends together and you can all see yourselves in the screen. And if you've got your watch synchronized or you've got one of the options, you know, clap or take photo, all those voice commands, you can get that perfectly framed photo selfie, effectively like having someone holding the phone, so doing a better job than arm-stretched selfies.
Now, that might be the most useful use of it, but personally, I quite like the alternative that Oppo offers, which is a return to the Tamagotchi that you might remember from the 90s. It's Oppo's digital pets, so you can have a virtual cat, or indeed a virtual dog, which sits on the cover screen and plays with balls or phones or apparently voice scooters. Clearly, that one's a bear that's come from Cambridge. But yes, it does mean you can have a little bit of an avatar or a sort of digital companion always visible on your screen. These are all very high efficiency in terms of power consumption screens. It means that you can have these sorts of things popping up effectively all the time without completely nuking your battery life.
Yeah, Motorola. Yes, they are still making phones. And the Motorola Razr 40 Ultra, their current clamshell phone, has a slightly bigger screen on the outer side, coming in at £1,050 at the moment.
I hate to say that's one of the cheaper ones.
That is, yes. And then Honor, an interesting brand that we don't see a lot of, have got a current phone out, the Magic 5. But they have literally today, the 7th of August, announced that they will be unfolding some new phones at IFA 2023. So there's an announcement expected in its keynote of a couple of new folding or foldable devices, probably the Magic V2. And then another one that's described as a trend-setting fashion element to a futuristic device. That's their marketing words.
Interestingly, on the Motorola, you talked about the Razr 2023. We are 1 year off of the 20th anniversary of the Motorola Razr. The first one, slightly bizarrely called the Razr V3, was launched in November 2004. And I think that was probably one of the first sort of mass market clamshell phones. So 19 years later, and they have still kept that same Razr brand. So very nicely
it's,
done.
It's
to,
when
to
you
Motorola.
Watch older TV series on catch up or your favorite streaming service and you look at the mobile phones they're using, that normally helps you date when that was filmed. And yeah, clamshell phones, of course, being the rage at the turn of the century. So yeah, interesting stuff. And who knows where we'll go from these. I think the next thing is going to be trying to remove the screen out of the actual equation.
Yes. The other question, of course, everyone's asking is whether there is going to be an iPhone flip, an iPhone fold. There's been a few mock-ups floating around the internet. Obviously, no firm announcements yet. But I think that will probably cement the technology as being
the £2,000 phone.
Quite possibly. Watch this space, as always. Maybe this year.
Cambridge 105 Radio.